All right, at this time, it says chairperson should briefly qualify. Requirements for chairing a meeting at the Central Lando Group Saturday night speaker meetings are 1 year of continuous sobriety. Have sense with your home group and attend a group conscious meeting, and I've done all that. My name is Gene, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm not going to go too much into it. What I can tell you is that I was born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I've been drinking since I was 5 years old. But what I do want to talk about is what happened since I've stopped drinking. You know, my family disowned me, and I haven't seen my family since. The last time I saw them was around December 29th of 1984 until the 19th of last month. I was reunited with my family due to this program. So if you don't think miracles can happen, they do. You know, because when I did my step work with my sponsor and I got to that fourth and fifth step, I finally come to the conclusion I will never see my family again. I ate those words. Because when I did my ninth step and I made amends and I found them on Facebook, I made my amends and they decided to invite me back into their lives. And I just recently went up to Philadelphia and met my nieces, nephews, cousins, sisters, brothers, and everybody else. And on top of that, I have a 24-year-old daughter who was adopted at birth, who I've been in contact with for the last 3 years. I also got to spend a week with her up in New York. So this is what this program has given me. And it's just through the grace of God and the fellowship and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you. Reminder, this group asked me to remind you to please make sure your phones are off and to refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker is sharing. Now I get the pleasure of introducing the speaker. I have a lot of mentors here at Central in AA, and the person I asked to speak tonight is one of those mentors. Now, I don't speak to all my mentors too much. A lot of times I do a lot of listening, and when this woman shares, she shares a lot of positive stuff that helped me get through a lot of things and understand myself a lot. So with that, I'm just going to introduce to Heidi.
Thank you, Gene. I'd like to take this opportunity before I get started to thank the group and you for allowing me the opportunity to share in this way. My name is Heidi. I'm alcoholic.
Hi.
Anche mi chiamo Carmelo Luciano Edinato Genovese. Io sono alcoholic. Say ciao, Carmela.
Ciao, Carmela.
So, what a good-looking group of drunks. Holy smokes. I know. I don't know if you've been to the local watering hole lately, but it doesn't look like this. So, I'd like to start off a little bit by talking about what I think about Alcoholics Anonymous, and then I'm going to tell you where I come from, how I got here, and how I stay here. But it strikes me when I look around the room, and there are quite a few people here tonight. I'm not nervous at all. When I look around the room tonight, I think about just the idea that, say, Gene here, he's a friend of mine. We don't see each other often, but we see each other around campus here. I'm having a much better day because Gene stayed sober today. And if we look around this room, and each of you has at least three people in your life that are probably having a much better day because you're sober tonight, right? Mothers, fathers, wives, arresting officers. And I know that in my life, I have at least three people as well. So let's think about how that grows exponentially throughout just the city of Orlando. Let's think about the depth and width of how that grows exponentially throughout the state of Florida, the United States, the world. Right? Exciting. How many people are doing better? Now let's flip side it. What if everybody who is sober tonight went out and drank tonight? What would tomorrow look like? It would be a plague, right? Seriously. So if you're new and you're not sure that this works, or you're not sure that this is for you, that's okay. But let me tell you what you're being exposed to here tonight. This is an altruistic movement that has changed the world. Changed the world. And you can be a member when you choose it. All you have to do is choose it. I think that's really exciting, personally. I've been a member of other organizations that were not nearly as exciting. You know, being a member of something where there's a head count required at the end of the night. Okay. We've done jail time, they haven't. It's okay. So let me start at the beginning. I was born in a very small Italian town. I am an Italian immigrant. The name of that town was Spreto. It is northern Italy. It's between Monza and Milan. Some of my earliest memories are very difficult for me to share about. And my friend Michael's here, so I'm going to talk a little bit about myself, because if I don't, he will give me all kinds of hairy court shit tomorrow. We hold each other accountable here in AA. So my earliest memory is having an encounter with the boogeyman. Every little kid is scared of the boogeyman, the guy comes out in the dark, right? Because of some of the decisions that were made by the adults in my family in the middle of the night, my house was raided, and I was yanked from my bed and taken away from my family. I was about 4. So that can change a person, but kids are resilient. And just about when I started to feel a little more comfortable, my family, which is a big, beautiful Italian family, used to spend an awful lot of time together, especially the extended family. And I remember my uncle, my favorite uncle, you know how we all have that, like that favorite uncle, and I were walking hand in hand after the family had had dinner together. As we're walking toward the vehicle, a gentleman walked up behind him and shot him in the head. This is all before I'm 6. So I'm on my way to alcoholism, okay? Or serial killer. Either way, I kind of teetered when I was in my adolescence. The very next thing that I remember that really stands out to me about my childhood is how warm and affectionate and unified my family was. So it was a lot of mixed messages for me growing up. And my very first school was about 17 miles from the Vatican. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about the faith that I was brought up with, but please keep in mind that I do not wish to engage in controversy. I am not the voice of AA. This is my story. My story is my sobriety. And part of my story involves some difficult times in that faith while I was growing up. So this is not an indictment of some outside institution. It's just my experience. So I'm 6 years old, and I'm going to this parochial school very, very near the Vatican. And for those of you who have practiced Roman Catholicism, you know that it does not get much more Catholic than that, okay? And on this day, I'm being dragged to the Mother Superior's office. And as a little kid, the Mother Superior is like, she's like, I don't know, God's baby sister or something. So it's me and Joey Capobianca and David Alfieri, and we're all getting taken into the Mother Superior's office. It's a little confusing. My mother's there, my father's there, and there's the vein in his forehead is going dun 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 dun. My mother's crying, and the other families are upset and crying. And Mother Superior told us that, and told our families that we were children of the devil, acting out on deviant behavior. And the main reason for this, the evidence for this, was the fact that we wrote with our left hands, and that we were independent, and that I particularly seemed to have no fear of retribution. I was sassy. Well, I'm Italian. Anyway, so at age 6, I had been proclaimed not even a member, not even a member of the human race. And that affected me. So we were to be strip searched and our heads were to be shaved to make sure that we were not the child of the devil, looking for the mark of the beast. Which, if I'd have had it, that would be so much way more cool, right? Darn it! You can never catch a break. So, having survived that and really absorbed it, I want to say today that in looking back on that, I believe in my heart that the people that were involved that day had absolutely no desire to harm those three little kids in that room. I believe they believed every word they were saying. On the contrary, I believe they were trying to save our souls. So how can I continue to carry a resentment for that? Well, I did a good job of it for a while. Today, it's gone. But it took coming here to Alcoholics Anonymous and learning from God through you that we're all doing the best we can with what we have. And I've been relieved of that resentment through working the steps with a sponsor who worked the steps with a sponsor, using the precise instructions in our big book. And I'm grateful. I am very grateful. So here I am, a child of the devil. My family was just, they'd had enough of the craziness in the mother country. So we were coming to the United States. It was very exciting. And my sobriety date is March 18th, 1987, by the way. Yeah, I'm old. So, I ended up, I did get sober in my late 20s, so I'm not that old, but I'm no spring chicken anymore, and I'm okay with that. So, here's the thing. When we came to the U.S., it was the late 1960s, early 1970s. The United States was in some turmoil at that time. And so we sort of landed inadvertently in a very white Anglo-Saxon Protestant neighborhood. And we were not a popular family. We were very ethnic. And here I thought, coming to the United States was going to change everything. Nobody knew I was a child of the devil here. I could reinvent myself. And here we landed in a place where it was very evident that we were not welcome. And I was at church, and I was playing outside with another little girl that attended the same church school as I did, and at some point, her mother came running out and grabbed her up, and we were little kids, you know, so it was like, what? What happened? And she said to her, I told you not to play with that little guinea. No reason to be hanging out with these little greasy wop. What? So here I was again in a situation where I just didn't feel like I'd found a home. I just didn't feel like I fit. And I really didn't even know the first thing about that kind of prejudice. I had to go home and ask my mother what a guinea was, first of all. I mean, I just learned to speak English. I didn't know what any of this stuff meant. And unfortunately, I learned exactly what prejudice meant. So, fast forward a little bit, operating under this condition, I believe in my heart that it led to the kinds of behaviors where life on life's terms just became at some point intolerable. And so I was seeking a solution. And as I grew up, this feeling of never feeling like I belonged anywhere continued to progress. And of course, since it was what I was focused on, it just seemed to grow and grow and grow and grow, and at some point I was just resolute. I don't belong. Whatever. That's fine with me. I don't want to be a member anyway. So, fast forward again to time for me to go to college. And I've decided that I was already professionally doing art at that time. And I decided I wanted to go to art school. And my father had generously proposed that he would pay for my schooling. And I was like, great. If I go to pre-law. There's no career in art. Don't be silly. Well, you know, Daddy, I think that what I'm best at is art. I think that he said, I think that what you're best at is arguing. Anybody got any? You got any teenage daughters at home? How many? Arguing, right? So I said, okay, Dad, whatever you say, and I promptly took the money and I went to art school. Seriously? Alcoholics are amazing liars. I made it for 2 semesters without him knowing what school I was going to. He was very upset when he found out what was really going on. The forehead thing again? So, I was already doing professional art and I'd taken on a second job as a street pharmacist. Now, this is an open meeting, and I really want to be very respectful to the idea that we are in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and I want to share honestly. And I will tell you that alcohol was always present. No matter what, I always drank alcohol. Regardless of whatever else I was doing, alcohol was always present. So I will always identify as an alcoholic. So I opened up this little business and at some point decided that my daytime job wasn't all that fun. And I figured I could expand this business if I went directly to the source. Why go to the warehouse when I can go to the actual manufacturer? So I decided I was going to cut out the middleman. And when I did so, the president and CEO of that company took issue with my business decision. And so he decided that he was going to form a hostile takeover of my little company. I wasn't going to have that, see? So... Needless to say, there was a confrontation, and you know, we got into a physical confrontation, and it's never, I love watching movies, action movies. It's one of my guilty pleasures, and I love when they're doing the fight, the confrontation thing, you know, and it always looks so smooth and it looks so cool. Well, let me tell you something. 2 drunk ass drug dealers trying to figure it out on a soup does not look cute or pretty or staged or cool. It's just sloppy and ugly and miserable. So we're fighting and we land on the soup, and anybody from the Northeast, you know what a soup is?
Yep.
Right? We land on the stoop, and I am getting my behind kicked, much to my chagrin. And so at this point, he's got me on the ground, and he's towering over me. And since he cannot acquire from me what he really wants, he has decided that he is going to make an example of me. And he nearly cut me in half. He stabbed me in my abdomen. And what I remember most is not the incision. What I remember is the tugging on my center. And so as he's towering over me and about to, what felt like, cut me in half, I had this moment of clarity. Like, this can't be. This is not the way I'm supposed to go out. Right? And so now this part is a little like a movie. It is kind of cool. because he's over me and there's a light shining behind him, and all of a sudden I hear this donk, and he sits up real straight, stops what he's doing, and he's just like a tree. And this woman's face appears where his was, and she's got a bat in her hand, and she says, "Not today, my brother." So we roll him out to the street, and we're trying to figure out what to do because my guts are hanging out, right? I mean, a couple of drunks trying to figure it out. So she's drunk, and I'm drunk, and I'm like, "You can't take me there." About 8 blocks away from the medical center, we're on the Hill District of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I'm about to bleed out or lose an intestine or something. And in our infinite wisdom as alcoholics, we decide I should walk. Brilliant. So I start walking. It's about 8 blocks, and it's January in Pittsburgh, so it's very, very cold out. It's, and lucky for me, because I start to see that my blood has gone really dark. I mean, I'm literally kind of holding myself together, and I've seen in a movie or something somewhere that if your blood goes dark, you're in trouble. And so I made it to the emergency room, and again, I thought, this can't be. This can't. Come on, man, I'm a child of the devil. What's up? You should have a trick in my back pocket somewhere. So, obviously I survived. And you would think, this is January of 87, you would think it would have been clear to me that perhaps I needed to make a change. Because I didn't get in trouble every time I drank, but every time I'd gotten in trouble, I'd been drinking. So they stitched me up, they patched me up, they sent me on my way, and I'm out of the hospital for about 2 weeks, and I think to myself, just a flesh wound. Wasn't that bad. Got a really cool scar. Awesome story. Maybe I could open up business. So, a very long story short, I went ahead and did that, and got myself into some trouble. Not a whole bunch of trouble, but it was just revolving door, in and out of jail, in and out of institutions. And I was very close to what I would consider living like an animal at this point. And I decided that I was going to exclusively drink and try to get my life together, you know. I'll just drink. Everything will be good. So, March 17th, and I'm at a bar downtown Pittsburgh. It's called Mitchell's Irish Pub. March 17th. Green beer. St. Patrick's Day. And so, I'm at this Irish pub, and I'm just belligerent at this point. Whatever, I'm a convicted felon, I'm a drug dealer, I'm a goof, I'm an alcoholic. And I'm sitting there drinking beer, and there's this big Irish guy beside me, just spouting, talking. And at some point I said to him, you know what, buddy? First of all, St. Patrick's Day. Don't you mean St. De Pasquale, who is actually Italian, not Irish? And the only real reason there is even a St. Patrick's Day is because you Irish pigs cannot make it through Lent, so you got to have one day to hoop it up so you can make it. I was so sweet and demure back then. So, we are arguing, and I am telling him his mother eats too many potatoes, that's why she's too fat, and it's a thing, and he shoves me, right? He shoves me. Yeah, I don't like being shoved. So, I had two brothers. I knew how to fight. So, I punched him in his throat. And he started sliding down that. You know, when you punch someone in the throat, they do something like this. Sliding down the bar stool, and I said, just so you know, I've not actually broken your larynx or your esophagus. You will get your wind back in just a few seconds, but it's very important that you relax, because if you pass out, all of your muscles will relax, and if you haven't used potty recently, you will wet yourself. Not a good idea. Relax and breathe. Now I'm thinking, it's a no-lose situation for me. He's a big guy, but if he gets up and he beats me up, he beat up a girl. If he gets up and I beat him up, he got beat up by a girl. Either way, I win. So I'm relaxed. I just go back and I sit down and I'm drinking my green beer. And he comes storming over and he empties out my purse, which has a few condiments in it, and he puts his badge on the bar. Nice, right? My friend Michael calls that leading with the chin.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I was in trouble again, and I was in front of the same magistrate again, and she said, you know, I don't think you're a bad person. I think you're sick. I think you're really sick. And I said, I'm sick. I'm sick. How about this guy over here? These police officers that keep bothering with me, I'm not bothering anybody, they're sick. Okay, I'm not sick. So she says, well, there's a couple of choices here. Either you're sick and you will be going to Gateway Rehabilitation Center, or they're sick and you will be going back to Muncie State Correctional Facility for Women. So I went, oh. I'm feeling kind of sick. I feel good. And by some miracle, I didn't have to go back to jail, and I landed in a rehabilitation center, and I did very well there, actually, and I heard a few things, and I made it for 27 days. A 28-day program. Now, I had this really great therapist, and the day before I was going to be released, he started telling me some truth. Now today I like surrounding myself with truth tellers. Back then I wasn't ready to hear the truth, pretty much ever. And he continued to tell me these truths, and I asked him to be quiet. I asked him nicely, in English. And he continued to tell me the truth, and I asked him again nicely to be quiet. And he continued to tell me some more truth. And so I told him to shut up, and I grabbed him around his throat, and they asked me to leave. And so I knew I was in trouble, and I did not want to go back to jail. And I had heard that one of my friends had gone to AA, been to AA in 82, and I was convinced it didn't work for me. I'd been told by someone who I perceived as an old timer, I think he had like 5 minutes sober or something, that if I did not accept Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior, I was never going to stay sober. And I said, dude, I'm straight fucked because I'm a child of the devil. So, why bother sticking around here? So, yeah. So, but I decided I could lay low, I could learn how to drink like a lady, and maybe not go back to jail. And so I went to a meeting, and like I said, I'd heard a few things at this rehab that rang true to me, and I'm sitting in this meeting, and I don't really remember a lot of what I heard. I was very angry, and like nothing was really firing on even half of my cylinders, but what I did here was blah, 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 God, blah, 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 higher power, blah, 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 God. But I was desperate, and that desperation led me to some willingness, and even if I was going to have to hear blah, blah, God every day, if it was going to keep me out of jail, I was willing. If they were going to turn me into a Christian or whatever, that was fine with me at that point, because I really had landed on that jumping off place where I was desperate enough to do whatever it took just for that day. And so at the end of the meeting, they were doing chips, and I'd already kind of decided that this was some kind of cult. It wasn't really for me. Remember, I don't join. I'm not a member. I'm not a joiner. Okay? Just here to lay low, get rid of some consequences, forego some future consequences. But, you know, the people I was with, they're doing the chips thing, and the woman that was up there doing it was from the Midwest. Her name was Debbie. Debbie was this big blonde woman. Now remember, this is the 80s, and she had that hair that like arrived 10 minutes before you do. Big hair. Big, beautiful, robust woman. Just fabulous, and she's happy. Okay, folks, let's do the chips. And I'm like, so at some point they call for one day sober, or the desire to stop drinking, and I'm thinking, yeah, I'm gonna, because they're pushing me out of the chair now. I think, okay, I'm gonna get the chip, for God's sake, get it over with, and I don't really think I'm coming back here. This is freaking me out. So I walk up there with my best hate face on. Because I'm not hugging her, okay? I'll take the chip. Don't touch me. So I take the chip, and before I have a chance really to take the next breath, this big, beautiful woman just scoops me up in this big Midwestern mom hug. You know those hugs? Where it just feels like you're safe. And she whispered in my ear, "Welcome home." Very simple. Just between me and her. She's the reason I went to my second meeting. So we never know. We never know what a very small act of kindness is going to do. That was 24 and some odd years ago, and it still touches my heart like it was yesterday. So thanks. No one ever does that. I'm serious. This is one of my complaints here at Central. Everybody else always gets a damn tissue and nobody ever gets me one. I think you just healed one of my original pains. So I'm going to AA meetings, and I have a sponsor, and she's a little Italian girl who hates everyone, and I think she is the greatest thing in life. And she took me through the steps, and she taught me about her higher power, and she, you know, tried to give me an opportunity to grow. And we went through the big book together, and I learned so much from her. And after we'd gone through the steps, she suggested that I begin to offer to go through the steps with other young women in sobriety, and I did so. And I was sponsoring this young woman. I had a little bit of clean time under my belt, a little bit of sobriety time under my belt, and she was going through a very difficult time, and I decided that I would share with her some of my experience, strength and hope, so that I may be of service. And as I began to tell her this story, she finished it. Now, I had only ever told this story to one other person, and that was my sponsor in AA, in my fist up conversation. So, I took a deep breath, and I prayed, and I thought, please God, don't let it be. Probably she knew she was going through this thing, she shared it with her to avert misery and death, to help her through her own situation. And I said, where did you hear that story? And she said, oh, your sponsor was at my mom's house last week, and they were playing poker, and she was telling us a little bit about your fifth step conversation for a few laughs. Right. So I took a deep breath and finished my conversation with her, and I hung up the phone and began immediately to plan the demise of my sponsor. Or more accurately, her dog, because she loved her dog with all her heart. Don't worry, I didn't kill the dog. I just planned to. So I'm just rocked, right? My trust has been shattered, and old ideas, old opinions, old observations, and old behaviors became a part of what I was about for those couple of days. And so I did. I planned to harm her, or harm her most beloved pet. But I decided to call a friend in AA first. I needed a driver. Okay. So, Tracy Smith, awesome, extraordinary AA, Tracy Smith, friend of mine, very annoying, but a great AA, and she had a really cool car, too, so I figured if I was going to pull a caper, I'd want to be in a cool car. And so she said, yes, I will come over to get you, and I will take you to kill the dog. I'll be there in like 10 minutes. She comes over, she picks me up, and she says, yes, we're going to go kill the dog, but I got to go to Walmart. And she comes out of Walmart, I'm like, look, I'm on a time schedule here, I got things to do. Okay, we'll go kill the dog in a little bit, but I got to go over here to Kmart. I went to every big box store in the Pittsburgh area that day. So by the end of the day, I was exhausted, and she said to me, do you really want to kill that dog? I said, no. She said, do you want to recover from this? I said, yeah. And she shared with me her experience, strength, and hope. And she helped me get to a place where I could understand that my sponsor at the time really just wanted to fit in. She wanted to feel like she was at home. Her character defects led her to a place where she may have done something that was not particularly sober. But how could I hate her for it, really? Which one of us in this room alone can say that we've never acted out on our character defects? But you felt it, right? You felt it in the room when I talked about it. We all judged her. Me included. I was going to kill the dog. I'm not casting any stones here. But the lesson for me, I believe, and I learned it because my trust had been betrayed, is A, what was important is that I trusted. B, I'm only a legend in my own mind. And C, that it was possible from God through you with the principles of this program to make it through that experience, not only without drinking, but to learn a valuable spiritual lesson and be able to at some point share that spiritual lesson with other folks who may have had the same experience or may have fear of that experience that may hold them back from wanting to do the four steps. So if you're scared about your four step and your fifth step and all that stuff, I survived. Look, I'm living proof that if somebody tells your stuff, you will not spontaneously combust. And very, very likely you may learn something. So, I was still in need of a sponsor. Tracy taught me how to detach without malice, create a comfortable space between me and that sponsor, but I did need a new sponsor. So I go to a meeting, and I'm complaining. I had be under Bach, and I had a woman come up to me after the meeting, and she said, "Girl, you hard-headed. What's your name?" "Who the fuck are you?" She said, "Oh, I'm your new sponsor. That's who I am. This is my phone number. You call me tonight." And I did. Right? God bless this sponsorship. So, when we got Tally, she became my sponsor, and I learned so much from her. I've been so blessed with so many wonderful teachers and mentors and sponsors over the years. And I kind of feel selfish, but so what? I'm an alcoholic. So, I really developed a wonderful relationship with her, and from God, through her, oftentimes I learned some really difficult lessons, but simple. And I'm very grateful to have had her in my life. She's my sponsor for a very, very long time. Now, even with good sponsorship, I had begun to balk again, and I was at a meeting, and I was starting to feel separate from. I had not kept up on my spiritual condition for a period of time, and so I was becoming belligerent again. I was at my second meeting, and complaining about the fellowship and complaining about the way the book was written. What? Like I'm a literary genius or something. And just irritable and sore, fretted and vexed. My lack of humility at that point in my sobriety was astonishing. And so after the meeting, I'm standing outside and I'm drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes. I was a member of the team, the AA smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee team. We were the champions. And I'm saying, you know what? I'm about this close from just going ahead and drinking. I'm miserable. I don't trust you people. I don't trust me. If I'm this miserable, I might as well drink. I had enough of this shit. I'm so tired of these smoke. Everybody smoked every damn where back there, back then. Tired of these smoking meetings and not getting any. The only thing I'm not that I'm happy with is that I'm not going to jail, and I think I've figured that out, and I might as well drink. And from behind me, I hear a voice say, "Not today, motherfucker." So I turn around, and there she is. There's the lady who saved my physical life on the stoop that day. I never thought I'd ever see her again, but she was sober, and she was in sobriety, and in my time of need, the God of my understanding saw fit for her to appear and say, "You're going to shoulder up with me, and you are not drinking tonight. That's it. Want to go kill a dog?" No, just kidding. Just kidding. So we developed a wonderful relationship, and we spent a lot of time doing 12-step work, and we did a lot of time doing the 12 steps, and really learned a lot from each other and from the groups. And I'm happy to report that today my life is beyond my wildest dreams. I do not even think about taking a drink of alcohol. I still have wonderful sponsorship. I've learned to practice these principles in most of my affairs, even my affairs. And for those of you that are new and you're thinking that perhaps this is a cult, it's weird. You're not a joiner. You don't want to be a member. People here are probably drunk anyway and they're not telling the truth. Maybe you're thinking that, you know, that you're just here because the wife wants you here, or the judge remanded you here, or you only have one DUI. What's the big deal? These people are crazy. Welcome home. You are among your kind. Yes, because almost every one of us have had those feelings or those thoughts. And I can assure you, if you stick around long enough and you do this deal, you do the program as it is laid out in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, with the help of a higher power, a sponsor, and the fellowship. For me, God brought me to the fellowship. The fellowship brought me to the program. the program, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, brought me back to God. Brought me back to God. When I am in a meeting, I believe that I hear the voice of the God of my understanding in the breath between two alcoholics sharing honestly with one another. That's where I hear the message. That's just me. So if you're new, stay away from people, places, and things. Come to a meeting. Ask God for help. Plan to go to another meeting tomorrow. Don't drink in between. Very helpful. Reach out. Ask for help. A few simple suggestions will lead you to a place where you will be amazed before you are halfway through. You will be a member of this unbelievably beautiful altruistic movement that I talked about early in my talk. All you have to do is choose it. One day at a time. Just one day. If you'll allow us to, we would like to help you and trudge the road to happy destiny with you. You get to choose. Again, I'd like to thank the group, and I'd like to thank all of you for being so respectful and quiet. I know that is so hard for alcoholics. You guys did great. I'd also like to say to the newcomer, we're really glad you're here, and I really do hope you feel at home here. If you don't, let us give you one of those big mom hugs. Don't all of you come to me, though. Brian is really good as a mom. Thank you, Gene. Thanks again.